All right. Welcome everybody to Planning Commission on March 9th, 2021. Whereas the Planning Commission chair has determined that conducting public meetings of the Planning Commission with an anchor location where the public could attend in person presents a substantial risk to health and to the health and safety of those who may be present at that location based upon the current COVID-19 pandemic and the limited staff support to properly ensure physical distancing and sufficient disinfection for attending staff. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Planning Commission shall hold meetings for the month of March 2021 by electronic means only and will not include an anchor location where the public could attend in person. That is, I didn't say, but that's a proclamation so that I proclaimed just now. Let's start with our Pledge of Allegiance before we get into our agenda. And Commissioner Jorgensen has offered to lead us in that. Commissioner?
Yeah, Ted, you can hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. please rise. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Commissioner. Before our regular numbered agenda items, are there any public comments today? And if so, just unmute yourself and share with us your name before your comment. If you're not sure that you're being heard, you can put something in the chat box. One last check. Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to our first item, which is a public hearing on a proposed amendment to the Land Use Code relating to Title 10, Chapter 1, the definitions, and also for Chapter 25 relating to the commercial highway zone to include a permitted use, artisan and craftsman industry, and other changes proposed by the applicant, Mr. Pantelakis, and apologies if I mispronounced it. We'll start with a introduction by staff.
Okay, I'll be taking this item for you. So the applicant, Mark Pantelakis, is the owner of the ILC Travel Outfitters. It's 329 North Highway 89. And he approached us maybe a month and a half ago about putting some different businesses in his building there to lease some space out. And we started looking at the code, and the two uses that he was looking at did not fit it within the CH zone. And so he has requested a code amendment. So we've been working with him on that code amendment. So the two uses that he wanted to have included in the CH zone, namely, were the an auto repair facility that sells and installs specialty drivetrains. And then the other business is a specialty manufacturer of ammunition. So both the CH, in the CH zone, the automotive repair is a specifically prohibited use, and so are manufacturing and industrial uses within the CH zone. For those of you that were here in 2015 on the Planning Commission, just to bring you up to speed, in 2015, we were just finishing and finalizing the Town Center Master Plan. And then we were getting a grant to work on our form-based code. And at that time, the council was concerned that the current laundry list of permitted uses in the CH zone could interfere with our implementation of the town center and the vision for the types of businesses and the walkability that we wanted to have in our town center. And so the code was amended. Well, first there was a moratorium put in place for 6 months while we rewrote that CH code. And then in the first part of 2016, we adopted an ordinance that eliminated those uses auto repair and any other we took out gas stations and convenience stores because we didn't want those automobile related businesses or to be the center of our town center. So as part of that, when we looked at the code, Mr. Panamalakis was wondering if we could interpret some of these things a little bit differently. And so we talked about it and said it would be better if we did a code amendment. So he filed this code amendment, and I've given you in your packet a copy of the language that he has requested. So essentially on this slide on the left side are, and this is just a summary, if you want to read the whole thing, obviously it's in your packet, but this is just a summary of the changes that he had requested to move to permitted uses, the auto body and fender shops with a 100-foot setback, convenience retail stores, industrial assembly and light manufacturing, online sales, retail establishments under 20,000 square feet, and automotive parts, including assembly and manufacturing of those parts. And then adding as a conditional use, auto body shops and repair facilities, and removing that same use from the prohibited uses. So when the DRC reviewed this application for these changes, we were really concerned that they went too far and that they actually undid some of the things that the Planning Commission and the City Council had done when they amended the code in 2016 to take those uses out of the CH zone. So as we were thinking about it as a DRC, it occurred to me that maybe we should look at the form-based code and see what other kinds of use, because I remembered something about a craftsman industrial use. So I looked in our form-based code, and sure enough, for the North Highway sub-district, a land use of artisan or craftsman industry is listed as will be a permitted use, but it didn't really define what a craftsman industry meant. It kind of talked in vague terms about it being some person who has a specialty craft, and then they would be building those things at that business and then also selling them to the public. So I envision that could be like a potter, or it could be somebody who does woodworking and makes rocking chairs or whatever. It doesn't really matter what but we kind of went with that and thought that that might be a good category, at least that we could fit the ammunition into, because it is a specialty business. It does take a special craft and some care with smaller hand tools that you put things together, and not large manufacturing processes. It's more of an assembly process than a manufacturing process. So our proposal from the DRC was to change the language to first off define what an artisan and craftsman industry was. And I have the definition there. It says production of goods in limited quantities by skilled workers using hand tools, small machinery, or other traditional methods. The production, assembly, and or repair of artisan and craftsman goods shall create no noxious byproducts and may include limited distribution and online sales. Both are two things that the form-based code talks about, is the limited distribution. You don't want to have a lot of warehousing in your town center. It's not very conducive to bringing people into shop. So, and then adding in the permitted uses under the CH zone, this artisan and craftsman industry, limiting it to the not the maximum building size, but the maximum space for that use is to 8,000 square feet. And obviously putting in the regulation to not create noxious byproducts and the requirement to have a retail show floor. So this is the language that the Planning Commission or the city, that the DRC is recommending to the Planning Commission, excuse me. We are not recommending any change that would allow automotive repair. I did explain to our applicant that he has the right to come forward to the Planning Commission meeting, and he can tell you why he thinks it should be interpreted the other way, and tell you his side of why he would like the code changes that he would like. So with that, and with the recommendation that the DRC gave you, I will turn this back to you. And we are again recommending the alternative language that staff drafted for this code change, and not recommending the changes that have been requested by the applicant.
Okay, thanks, Sherry. What the process that we're gonna go through here, subject to recommendations from the commission, is any clarifying questions for staff, just just seeking to understand. Then we'll go to the applicant for any initial comments from the applicant. Then we'll go to the public hearing and hear from residents, members of the public, any thoughts you've got. And then we'll circle, then we will circle back, discuss, and that may also include follow-up questions to staff or applicant. So unless there's recommendations about handling that differently, that's the way we'll proceed. Let me just throw two general points of awareness on this. I want to commend the staff for talking about in the staff report how these potential changes may or may not relate to the general plan. So the general plan, the citywide plan, looking out 10 to 20 years for the whole city, is the policy document that the Planning Commission defers to. That was adopted by the City Council. So that's an important consideration for us. And then the other point is that the commission has not discussed this. We got the packet of materials, including the recommendations from staff in advance, but we have not discussed this. And so there is nothing that you know beyond members of the community, beyond what we know, except that we've had the chance to read through perhaps a more detailed packet, and maybe not all of you have had that opportunity. So let's go with that game plan, unless there's any recommendations from the commission. Okay, so sorry for that. Lots of little caveats there. Any clarifying questions for staff?
I have a question. This is Elisa. Sherry and Mackenzie, thanks for putting this together. This looks really great. My question is about retail establishments. On the applicant's proposal, it says retail establishments under 20,000 feet would be added as a permitted use. And on the city proposal, what it looks like is that retail is already added under permitted uses.
Retail is already in there. What it said is that, and it's probably why this is a little bit confusing, because in the under permitted uses, we call it general retail and personal services, except those that are prohibited. And then down in D, we said retail stores over 20,000 square feet. So what we were trying to say is that, you know, general retail under 20,000 square feet is a permitted use. But once you get a building size that's greater than 20,000 square feet, then we want it to be reviewed by the Planning Commission instead of staff.
Great. Got it. That answered my question. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Commissioner Jorgensen. I had an additional question. I just want to verify intent. In the language, when I read the phrase no noxious byproducts, I'm interpreting that to mean waste streams and odors, things like that. Is that how that's being interpreted, or that's how it's intended?
That's how it's intended, yes.
Okay. So could you have, and this is not related to the particular applicant or whatever, it's just a generic question, but could you have bulk storage of hazardous materials that would be involved with this, even if it didn't generate, you know, waste streams or odors?
So they can have up to 8,000 square feet, so they could store their materials there. Any materials that get stored under this artisan craftsman industrial would have to be approved per the fire marshal if there's anything that is combustible. And then if they happen to be in a wellhead protection or wellhead source protection zone, overlay zone, let me say that right, that the particular chemicals that they might have, they have to turn in their MSD sheets, and then they get reviewed by our assistant city engineer to make sure that if there's something there that if spilled on the ground would contaminate our well, then we have them take special precautions in the way it's stored, and perhaps, you know, not stored in a room that has a floor drain or things like that go to the storm system. So that's how we handle that.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Other clarifying, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, this is Catherine. I just have a quick kind of general question also. So in the DRC recommendation, it says production of goods in limited quantities by skilled workers using hand tools, small machinery, or other traditional methods. Is there a differentiation that has to be made between that and manufacturing, which is currently listed as a prohibited use?
So I think what the difference is the small equipment. So if somebody gets into a big production where they're putting in big conveyor belts and doing something like FedEx or Albertsons do, then that we've really crossed the line into warehousing and distribution from this craftsman industrial. So the idea is it's something that's hand done for the most part, but with small tools or maybe some small machinery. So it's not entirely hand created. You can use the assistance of it, but it should be something that requires large industrial machines and, you know, possibly produce smoke or exhaust, things like that. I think those are the things we're looking for. We don't want, I know like we've had businesses in the past, one that did like a sandblasting kind of thing. We would want to look at something like that because the silicon dust can actually go and it gets out of the building and it was getting into other businesses. This was somewhere else, but so those are the kind of things we want to make sure are contained, or if they're using some sort of a machine that vents out to the outdoors that is not venting pollution or smoke in an area that is right adjacent to residential uses. That's really why we don't want the manufacturing and industrial, those highly intensive uses next to them, because we are right next to residential uses.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Okay. Let's go to the applicant, Mr. Pantelakis.
Very good.
Anything you'd like to add?
So the reason why we did the rewrite on the zone, we had our attorney firm Stoll and Reeves do that for us. And what we were trying to do is, after I met with Ryan Mumford on the city council, we talked about the plan was produced in 2015. In 2020, we're in a new world. And the next 15 years is a new world. We're talking 10 years of recovery from this pandemic for general offices, general retail, restaurants. We're in for a tough run for the next 10 to 12 years, I guarantee you. And in fact, as we were starting the meeting, I was hearing a lot of you talking about working out of your home. Of course, I'm in the travel business. We were only down 70% last year and another 50% so far this year. So we're you know, trying to survive. So I've been here for 30 years, probably the last of almost all the retailers surviving on Highway 89. We're a destination business. So I'm going to take my building, I'm going to split it up and add some retail capacities to it. So as I look at that, I met with numerous restaurants. And in fact, I was just on the phone with Ryan just before the meeting here. He was telling me about the TIF program. And even with TIF money, they haven't been able to persuade restaurants or others to get in on this CH zone. So he goes, if I can get somebody to come in on that zone, we have money available if I build a new building. As we know, building costs have skyrocketed 3 times this last year too. So we see a lot of costs that have been changed there. So what I see from a retailer that's been doing retail now for 40 years this year, you gotta have service that's combined with retail. I do luggage repair, I do it purses, jackets, coats, backpacks. I do all that kind of stuff. And North Salt Lake doesn't keep me in business. It's because I draw from the Wasatch Front and actually the nation and what I do with my repair center. And then it converts into sales for me. So as I looked for people to come and be in the facility, that's what I was looking for. And so I, Sherry and McKenzie have done great to work with me. I apologize, Sherry. I probably misled you with the guy that we wanted in here with the auto side of stuff, because he's not an auto repair center. He builds custom parts for vehicles and does install on some vehicles with it, but most of his business is retail. So I looked at the automotive industry, the Napas, the O'Reillys, and the AutoZones are kind of covered by Bountiful right now. So I had to stretch out in a different world to try to come up with something. So Sherry presented this concept here, and this works good with the type of people I'm trying to attract for retail that can survive as a destination retail shop. And so, you know, I love this concept. I think the Planning Commission, you need to really seriously look at going forward with a plan that's really gonna, if you wanna really bring in retail, you gotta have service involved with it. Restaurants, you've gotta, it's gonna be really, really unique these next dozen years. So any questions, I'm happy to answer it. What we're looking for and trying to do.
Thanks, Mr. Pantelakis. I'm sure that you're so tired of correcting people with pronunciation, but.
No, it's normal life. After 60 years, I'm used to it here, so.
Questions for the applicant?
Can I ask one quick question? This is mostly just out of curiosity. So specialty manufacturing ammunition, is that sporting ammunition or what exactly would that be?
Yeah, that's what it would be. Anything from a shotgun shell to a 9mm. They just put the pieces together, sell it retail and online. And we met with the ATF and they okayed everything. Fire marshal gave us thumbs up. And so this is the last stepping stone to put that together here.
Yeah, I was just curious, thank you.
You're welcome.
And we've also verified the approvals from ATF. We contacted them just to make sure what the rules were, that we understood it too. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Sherry, a lot of the applicant proposed line items include the modifier as an accessory use. You know, for example, industrial assembly as an accessory use. What does it mean exactly, an accessory use? Is that just less square footage than the primary use, or is it?
Yeah, so that's kind of unclear on that, isn't it? But when we look at the general definitions in our code as far as accessory uses and accessory buildings, they are always smaller in height and also smaller in footprint. And that's one of the things they can't be bigger than the primary use, number one. Number two, it's very, that kind of language is just very, very broad. And I find that would be really difficult for future, well, for us staff right now and future staff to understand how they're supposed to interpret that. So that's why we didn't feel very comfortable with that language as accessory, because we think it can be covered in, you know, under the craftsman stuff much easier, because it just really defines it as something that's small. I mean, it's kind of one of those things like, you know what it is when you see it and you know what's not it when you see it. I know that's hard to say. I'm just saying, you know, when you look at what a small machinery is operation, as opposed to other manufacturing operations that take big equipment, you should be able to distinguish between what small hand tools and small machinery is, so.
Okay. All right, let's go to, let's open up the public hearing. And I neglected one other basic fact, which is that the final decision-making body is not the Planning Commission. We will make a recommendation one way or another. The final decision is made by the council, since this is, any changes to this become legal code for our city. So at this time, we'll open the public hearing. If you have a question or comment, something you want to say, you'd kindly limit it to a few minutes, and then just start with a statement of your name and the community that you live in.
They're beating down the doors to come into this public hearing.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily the case that there's anybody out there, but we just want to make sure that you definitely have an opportunity.
I have a question. So.
Yeah, and if you would, just state your name.
Mark Pantelakis again.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mark. That was just a mistake of not recognizing the voice with the applicant. Apologies. Go ahead.
No problem. So on a change like this, again, I'm not familiar with how this is done. You were mentioned somewhat how it's done. So it goes to the, from the Planning Commission, it goes to the City Council.
Yeah.
The City Council then does it in a public meeting again.
Mm-hmm.
And then after they do it, is there, what's the next step beyond that?
If the council approves the change, the ordinance would be adopted that day and then take effect the very next day.
Okay, so it's not like a 6-month deal or anything.
Nope.
Okay.
Well, technically the ordinance takes effect upon posting. So they adopt it and then they certify it and then the recorder posts it. But I always just assume, you know, that's done almost immediately.
It's done. No, I just didn't know the procedure of how this all works. So thank you.
Okay, good question. All right, so we'll just do a last check to see if there's anybody that wants to speak on this item. 3, 2, 1. Okay, so we'll close the public hearing at this time and open it up for discussion with the commission.
I have a question.
Go ahead. Commissioner.
So the use for the manufacturing of the ammunition would fit under the Craftsman manufacturing or Craftsman industry, right? So that won't prohibit that type of vendor coming into the business. Okay, so then it really is down to the automotive repair option because both options allow for the ammunition business.
Yes.
Am I understanding that right? Okay, great. Thank you. And as Go ahead.
I apologize. It wasn't about the automotive tonight. I was just apologizing to Sherry that I maybe didn't explain it right to her. But this is about the ammo tonight, right, Sherry?
Well, this change would affect the ammo.
Yeah.
Yes.
But both options on the table would allow.
Yes.
That. So,
yes.
Okay, great. And then Mr. Pentelakis talked about consideration of restaurants in our downtown corridor and service industry in our downtown corridor. As I understand it, both of those would be are permitted uses of that area. Is that right?
Yes.
Oh yeah, that's correct. I was just saying overall what our future looks like in North Salt Lake right now with the pandemic and what's happening is
great.
We have some challenges coming up.
Yeah, it can be rough out there for small businesses. I get it. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being here for so long. We're glad you're in North Salt Lake. All right, that was my question. Thank you.
And I've just asked to follow up with that. So the applicant is okay with the DRC recommended change language and is not even, you know, you're not formally withdrawing your proposed code amendment language, but you'd get what you would need from the DRC recommended language with just the artisan and craftsman allowed.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
By the way, what does DRC mean?
Development Review Committee.
Okay. It's the Democratic Republic of China's who I deal with in my international manufacturing. So
we can get into whether there's similarities there, but
too many acronyms in this world.
Well, we could Does anybody on the commission, by asking this question, I'm not trying to tip my hand on my own thoughts, but does anybody want to explore additional changes to permitted uses above and beyond the inclusion of craftsman manufacturing, whatever that term is? So I'm hearing nobody, right?
Ted, I might mention once again that the reason why I gave some of those other notes in changing for zoning was like under sales of automobiles, recreational vehicles, and motor vehicles, all these sales centers have repair centers placed in them. And so I was trying to help give some structure for the city to be able to work with these companies as they bring them in. I don't know what dealers are going to come in, but if the farmer next to me sold to somebody that could put in a big motorhome shop, he has 5 acres right there. I was just trying to give for future use. So that was the idea when I had the attorneys try to help us write some lingo for that.
I will say, sorry, there was feedback. I will say that I think that your logic has some validity. That, you know, land use markets are in a big state of flux, and notably a decline in retail, but also potentially an ongoing decline in office. So I look at items like, let's say, online sales as an accessory use to any other permitted use, that kind of thing, like allowing a little bit of flexibility, I think that, you know, that could be worth considering, something like that. And then of course, you have to figure out, well, where do you draw the line across the range of different bullet points that are suggested here. But, a contrary point of view, I think, is that this area is the only area citywide where we're trying to establish a town center. And I would translate that, we could pull up the general plan language, but I would translate that as we're trying to encourage an intensity of people. And it's almost like, is there a lot of employees per square feet? That's a translation of what we're trying to look for. We're looking for an intensity of people to create more demands on restaurants and public transportation and general vitality. And so if there were land uses that are a high ratio of square footage to people, right? That actually works against that. It reduces our activity. So on the one hand, I think flexibility, it's a good time for us to think about flexibility. On the other hand, I think that's part of the nature of the town center concept. Other thoughts on this, whatever you want to do, you could, we can go one by one. I asked the question of how many wanted to explore some of these more detailed line items. I didn't get any sense from the commission. We could entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
I move that the Planning Commission recommend for approval the proposed code amendment as modified and recommended by the Developmental Review Committee with the findings outlined in the staff memorandum.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Not sure who was first, but we'll go with Commissioner Van Langeveld as the second. Are there any comments on the motion? Hearing no comments, all in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
So that motion this carries. Will go forward to the city council next week.
Right. Mr. P, they don't have to follow our recommendation. Maybe that's the stupidest thing I've said all day, but they can be more expansive or less expansive than what we've recommended.
No, I think just helping out North Salt Lake overall, trying to get ready for the 2020 and beyond air is the big thing right now. So right. This, I think, is the starting point of being able to really do something. So good job. Thank you, Sherry and McKenzie, for your part. I'm going to go ahead and leave if that's okay. I have to go teach class now. Thanks.
You are good. Yeah. I kind of like that that there was a landowner who was willing to give that a try, you know? That's good, you know, give us a little bit of a something to think about. Okay, here we go. Our next item is consideration of a concept plan for Alton Vista PUD 340 North Orchard Drive. And is Mr. Buhner here? I believe he is, right? I think I saw him earlier. So
yes, I am here. This is Brad.
Great.
I'm here.
Glad you're here. Sherry, is it you or Mackenzie that's leading out on this one?
It's me. Mackenzie. She just pointed to me. We always put it at the top. If it says my name at the top of the staff report.
I'm sorry.
Just for future reference, we play the game. Attention. We play this game every week, so I just wanted to give you a heads up.
And I pointed because I was muted. I'm just like, this is like the center square on Hollywood Square, so she's down.
Anyways, I'm presenting.
Go ahead, Mackenzie.
Okay. Sherry, if you want to go to the next slide. First and foremost, so they can look at it. All righty. So Alton Vista PUD, they're applying their concept plan right now. Once this goes through and goes through council, then they will submit their preliminary and final together, and we will do the same process all over again. It is the two parcels at 340 and 360 North on Orchard Drive, highlighted in yellow here. And combined, they have about 1.48 acres. So that's about 64,000 square feet. They are proposing to subdivide these two lots into four lots. Thank you, Sherry. By adding a new road, which has been reviewed and verified by DRC and South Davis Metro Fire. They have proposed a road that's 20 feet wide, 260 feet long, and has a 70-foot hammerhead turnaround. So as a part of planned unit developments or PUDs, Code Section 1074 contains regulations related to them, which provides Planning Commission to vary lot area, yard height, and coverage requirements. So they can come in outside of our normal code regulations. As of right now, there are a few items that they are asking to be varied and approved by you guys. The first thing is in the R1-10 zone, which they are located in, each lot has to have 10,000 square feet. And the way they have it lined out right now, lot two, Sherry, can you just move your mouse over that to kind of show everyone really quick? So lot two is where she's looking. And that one is coming in under 10,000 square feet at 8,879. DRC finds that just to be fine. It's not a huge deal for that. The next thing they would like to request is per city code, primary and accessory structures on corner lots must be located a minimum of 25 feet from the property line and 8 feet from the side property line adjacent to the public right of way. The proposed concept plan shows following setbacks for existing structures. So if we zoom in on lot one, they're asking to keep the house, the garage, the shed, and the fence. The fence will not go into a clear view area and will end at the front yard setback where it meets the house. So that wasn't a huge concern. It is 5 feet away from the property line. The garage is 5 feet away and the shed is 8 feet away. The house is 23. So on lot two, they have the request of keeping the existing house. They are going to demolish the garage that you can see is intersected by the road right now on the plan. That house is 12 feet away from the proposed road as is. And then their existing pergola in the back is 15 feet away. So few items to note before we open up discussion. On lot one, they will be, or they're asking to keep the house, the shed, and have everything basically the same. Lot two, they're demolishing the garage. Lot three, they will demolish the basketball court and concrete pad. And then on lot four, this one has a 10-foot wildlife fence along its perimeter. And they are requesting to keep that fence until the lot is developed, which again, DRC thought was fine. The applicant's plan right now is to put a single family home on both lot three and lot four. Lot three will develop before lot four. When I talked to the applicant last, they said lot four is kind of far out in the vision, but they want to have it ready so that when they're ready to pull the trigger, they can do so. So at this point, the DRC is recommending approval of the requested concept plan for the four lot subdivision, Alton Vista PUD, located at 340 and 360 North Orchard Drive, with any conditions you guys require. We didn't have any. And that's it, Ted.
Thanks, Mackenzie. Let's hear from the applicant, Mr. Buhner. Anything you'd like to add?
We would like to, everything sounds good. It's just the court, we'd like to keep that pad just for an area for the kids right around, just to have another spot for parking or whatever.
The basketball court?
The basketball court, yeah.
Okay.
I think everything else sounded good.
Let's open it up for questions and discussion. I've got an initial question. What is the required rear setback in the R1-10?
Oh boy, I gotta hurry and pull that up. Oh, hold on. Sherry, so, do you know?
It's 25 feet. While you're looking at this, so remember that a PUD, we request subdivisions be PUDs if they don't meet all of the standards of the R110 zone, or the zone that they're in. And you as the planning commission can modify that. So you can modify the lot sizes. And as long as the overall density of the project doesn't exceed the density of the underlying zone. So in this zone where they have 64,000 square feet, if one lot is 8,000 square feet and the other one is 12,000 square feet, their average is 10,000 square feet. So you haven't exceeded the density of it. And then the other part of it, why we do PUDs, is because we want a private road so the city doesn't have to plow and maintain it. And they get an advantage for keeping it a private road in that they can make it a little narrower. It's narrower, and then they get to take care of it. So, as part of reducing those lots, then you can reduce the setbacks. And the setbacks are actually established in their code at preliminary plan. So if you have any suggestions of setbacks that you want them to reflect on their preliminary plan, this would be a good time to discuss that.
And before you add on to that, something to note with accessory structures, the setback is different. If they have I think it's a 1-hour rated firewall, they can be within a foot of the property line. If they don't have that firewall though, they need to be 3 feet away from the property line. So just something else to consider. That's kind of the safety side of it.
So is Mr. And Mrs. Buhner, are you, you're gonna live on lot three?
That's correct. We're gonna build a house back there.
And question. You already live in lot number two? And
then we're in two right now, yeah.
Your brother is in lot one. So this is kind of—
I'm in lot one. Yeah, I'm in lot one.
They're brothers and they own the properties next to each other. And so they're both working together. So when we address them for questions, I think it's acceptable to talk to both of them.
Yeah, I object. This all looks terrible.
Hey, I worked hard on this. So did your contractor.
I'm kidding. This looks great. As long as there's a swimming pool on lot four at some point.
Mackenzie,
I'm kidding, guys.
Can you show me where the driveway approaches would be? Because I think on lot two, the driveway approach needs to be moved. Is that it? That's it right there in the corner?
So they haven't noted that on the concept plan. We can definitely ask them. All that we've discussed at this point is that we asked, they did not have any driveways off of Orchard. They came back and requested the one to the north on lot one, which DRC was fine with as long as all the others come off of the private road. And from that point, we didn't really give them any specifications or commentary on the location. So this is a good time for you guys to do that though.
So that's kind of what I noted. I didn't see that I could tell where a driveway approach would be. And given that this lot is the smallest of all of the lots with existing structures that are already close to the street, I'm just wondering if there is some, either a plan for where the driveway approach would be, one, or number two, why did you want to have that lot so much smaller than the other lots? If either of the applicants would just kind of share their thinking.
Oh, for ours.
For lot two, is that what you're wondering?
Right. So the driveway, what's the plan for the driveway for lot two? And then just your thinking about why that one is so much smaller than the others.
We personally just wanted as much space as we could for the lot four or lot three that we're going to build on. And then we'd have as much land as there as possible. And then the driveway for two, I guess we haven't really mapped where exactly that could be, where the parking would be, but it would definitely come off of that road. Because the existing driveway, yeah,
to the back. So if you wanted to put a carport back here,
yeah, we were thinking we could even put a carport, use that pergola as a carport to pull around to the backside, and that should be like a two-car width.
And then, is your plan to sell the front house and then live in the back house, or are you keeping all the houses in the family?
We're thinking of renting the front house, and then we'll live in the back portion.
There has been talk to eliminate one Dan from house number one.
Okay.
Oh, I got real. Oh.
Thank you. That answered my question.
You might have been getting
there, yeah, there is funny. Plenty of room on the back side to put parking on that lot two.
There is?
Yeah.
They were saying using the pergola that's already there or the space of.
Right. Yeah. Because that's a patio.
That kind of gets to why I asked about the rear setback is, I think a thing that we could think about is just the viability of each lot over time. And if lot two, part of the challenge is if you relocate the parking, which you would have to do, you really don't have much of a usable backyard. And, essentially we're allowing a variation from the underlying zoning with regard to, if we were to approve this, with regard to minimum lot size and rear setback. If we were to extend the length from the back of the rear house 25 feet, you're probably getting close to, if not at, the minimum lot size, and you're giving it enough space where probably the viability of that lot over time, the value of it remains higher. So I just wanted to think aloud about that, see if the applicant has a comment on that or other commissioners.
Yeah. So Ted, I think the reason why they chose to do that dividing line where it is there is a defined elevation change on the back of lot one where it steps up quite a bit. And so if they were to extend that property back, let's say 5 feet or whatever would put it into that realm of square footage that you're talking about, it would make that space just wasted. It wouldn't be usable because of that elevation change.
Additional 5 feet, you're saying?
Yeah, any amount. I mean, it would be a very thin sliver of property that they would have to maintain, whereas right now where they have it, it's very easily maintained. It's just a very defined transition between lot one and lot three now. Oh, two and three, excuse me. That makes it it just made sense during this portion.
Okay, and that's helpful. Thank you. And if you don't mind, would you state your name just for our record?
Darren Fenwick.
Would you mind just spell your last name?
Fenwick.
Okay, that's for the people like me that don't hear things right. So you're that's fine. Great. Thank you for that. Okay.
As for parking, Ted, when we first started talking about this and having that road be on the north side of lot two, they thought that a convenient place to park would be in between that road and the house itself.
Can you help us, maybe Sherry, identify where you think?
So if you put your scroll right at the front of the house where it says see note.
So are you thinking like that you might have like a parallel parking space like that?
Well done. Yes, exactly.
I am an engineer now.
You nailed that.
Skills.
Ooh, I got math skills.
Math skills. So then those homeowners that would live in lot two, they could, you could put, if you wanted to, two cars easily, front to back going east to west, or if you wanted to park diagonally, you could fit, you know, three or four cars if you had company and keep them off the road so as to not impede people leaving from lot four and lot three.
Would having that parallel parking right there impact the setback from the side of the house, or does the parking count as a part of the setback?
You can park in the setback.
Okay.
Especially a side yard, a side street one like this, because the house faces Orchard, so that's its front. This is its side street.
I have a question with that configuration, because when I'm reviewing this, my primary thought, because I take that left in front of these houses twice a day, do you currently back into Orchard to leave your house?
Yeah, and we can't.
With this configuration, would you more likely be able to pull forward out?
Absolutely. Oh, for sure, yes.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it seems like lot one was configured to be able to do that with the large driveway. So, yeah. I mean, I think that would be a very good improvement to the.
It'd be a lot safer for us, that's for sure.
Yeah.
For everyone. Like, I'll back onto the grass to pull forward out because it's so right. much easier.
Right. Okay, thanks.
So this is Commissioner Jorgensen. I just had a quick question about the new structures that would go in, the new residences and so forth. Is it safe to assume that those might be multi-story? I think under the code, you could build up to 35 foot in height and so forth. And I'll just tell you, the reason I ask is, just on my own little street, I know people become a little bit sensitive to that when something goes up in their backyard that maybe they weren't expecting. Anyway, I'm just curious what you envision building do you expect that there would be any concerns from adjacent neighbors?
I think that the elevation change between the lot three and four and those neighbors that are directly behind is pretty significant. I'm not sure what exactly it is, but I mean, you climb up the hill to get to those houses. They are planning on putting a two-story house on lot three. Lot four, obviously, Dan has been dragging his feet and hasn't done a whole lot of homework on what house he wants to build there. But I would be surprised if it is not a two-story house as well.
He's probably waiting to win the lottery or something.
Yeah, that's right. I just got my job back, so thanks.
Congratulations, Dan.
Good job.
This is why you don't live near family.
I don't even know that guy.
You will.
thank you for that. Some other sidebar, I'll have to tell people my story about my street and the two times I saw this became an issue. But anyway, not for this meeting. The other thing I wanted to ask about, is you aware of the geohazard in that area that's been identified by the Utah Geological Survey? Specifically, it's the Wasatch Fault Zone. This is part of something they call a surface fault rupture hazard special study area. Are you all aware of that?
Is it right in that area, in our area?
Yeah, yeah, and there's uncertain, the way I interpret it, and again, I'm not a geologist or an expert, but the way I interpret the report and the information that's available online, this is available to you too, by the way, but there's some uncertainty on exactly where it's at, so they've kind of drawn a big boundary around it on both sides, up slope and down slope of that, and I'm not sure that they know exactly where it is, but the city actually has some code language that Sherry, I guess it'd have to be clarified to me whether it would apply to a PUD or not. But I guess the thing that, since you're going to be living there, I think, and I live nearby, so I live with the same thing. But anyway, I just wondered if you were aware of that.
So just to give you a little bit of I have to check this and see if it's in the sensitive lands overlay zone. I'm not sure if it does or not. But if it is in the sensitive lands overlay zone, then what would be required at the time of building permit is that they would have their a geotech come in and do a soil sample and then observe digging the foundation. And if they expose any fault or any questionable soils, then that the geotech would have to make some changes to the structural plans of the home to address whatever the problem was. Or if it's soft soil, they have to remove it and put in fill. If it was a fault, then there are certain, I haven't come across a fault one before. So that's just the caveat. I haven't ever had that happen to me yet. And I've been a planner for 22 years. So
let me just say,
if they found it, then there would be engineering considerations that would have to be made.
According to our documentation, they are not in what we consider the sensitive lands overlay zone.
Good.
But I would still, if you're close to it, when you're digging your foundation, you want to look. And our building official can help with that too.
Yes. I wanted to mention something really quick. So tomorrow I will be sending out a notice to the neighbors to invite them to the next final and preliminary meetings to discuss this. And at that time, I think we'll be able to get a little bit more into the elevations and things like that. But the neighbors will be invited.
Just so you know, what happens with the subdivision is we send out a public comment period because the state code and neither does our ordinance require a public hearing for subdivisions. But what we do require in our code is we send out notices to everyone within 300 feet. And then that letter tells them, here are the things that you might want to, if you know anything about these things, that you might want to comment and contact the city. So if they know where there's an irrigation ditch that goes through this property that didn't get put on it, or, you know, that feeds the back of their property, and they want to make sure that we've made sure we know about that. Or if there's an easement that we didn't know about, we missed, and some neighbor knows about it, then they have the opportunity to submit those comments to the staff, and we then submit it to Planning Commission.
And I wanted to mention that just for our new commissioners, just so they know the next steps in the process. So thank you, Sherry.
Thank you. All right, additional comments, questions, or a motion?
I will say for myself, I'm not hung up on lot size for lot two, but I do think a larger lot size there would make that property more desirable as a rental as well. That if you have the rental space, but you're parked right in next to your house or taking up a whole backyard space for parking, I think that will affect the price you can get for renting your house. But it's not an issue that is meaningful enough to me for me to require it or vote against it. That's just a comment. I think that makes the development more appealing, in my opinion, but not something that's a deal breaker for me.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm struggling a little bit with that as well.
So just so you have a little bit of information, in order to make lot two be 10,000 square feet, the lot line would need to be moved approximately 15 feet. I just did some simple math, 15 times 73 feet. It might not be exactly 15, but that's what comes up to be the other 1,100 square feet that would make it 10,000, if that matters.
So in functional use right now, if the house there is remaining in the family lot too, it really wouldn't affect any of the grading or anything if we did move the lot line, because that's not something you would have to do until you sold the house, right? Like that wouldn't necessarily require anything to change on that property at this point, would it?
No.
So it would just be in the lot line, that if that house were to a third party, that they would then have the responsibility to manage the land there that you said was pretty steep, but it still would give the lot a better usability, but it wouldn't impact your pricing or anything, your plans to move forward with your home in the back lot, correct?
That's correct.
So that would only be something that you would have to deal with as a financial burden or something if you were going to sell that property, which would then make it a more desirable property to somebody that's coming in that's not part of the family, which may never happen. But if it were to happen, it makes that a better lot from the city perspective. So I personally don't have an issue with it being this way or the parking this way or any of that as the rental. But I don't see necessarily what the downfall would be for us to require the lot line to move if it's not requiring anything until it would become another property owner's property. But maybe I'm missing something on that. Because I don't want to add a burden to you. I think this sounds so delightful and fun to live with your family side by side like this. And kind of, it's probably been a dream for many years to watch this happen. And that feels very exciting for me to see that happen between you. Clearly have a very good relationship. But I just wonder if putting a lot line that might make that property more functional in the long range planning use of it, it wouldn't necessarily be difficult for you guys unless you were going to sell it. And if you never sell it, then it never comes up to where you would have to deal with that grade or anything.
Right. Those okay. Are my thoughts on it.
And does the app, anything else you want to say about that? Anybody on the applicant side?
So if we distinguish a lot line now, is that permanent or can that be changed like upon selling it one day? Or is that, I mean, I guess it doesn't matter where.
You'd have to go through another process to move the lot line, but you know, and Sherry, you can elaborate on that if you'd like.
Yeah, you can either amend the plat or you can do a lot line adjustment.
Okay.
I mean, it's at least that's the way the state code and our code is written today. We never know what the legislature might do in coming years.
Right. Okay. Understandable.
Does it feel burdensome to you if we were to ask to have that lot line be in compliance? Does that change anything for you in your long range planning?
Can we talk about it for just a second?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why anyone would want to live by their sibling.
I was just going to say that. Did anyone else feel like she was patting herself on her back? Just kidding.
Well, I'm still here. I don't love it.
Well, it's funny because Brianna and Elisa are sisters and they live next door to each other.
We live right next door to each other.
Oh, really?
That's why we all smiled.
We have a sidewalk between us. We have a sidewalk between our yards, and Elisa constantly is planning how we could get the city to let us take that down so we could have one giant compound like what you have. So she's looking at her dream when she sees this property.
I'm proposing a tunnel underneath.
Yeah, a bridge. She wants like a sky bridge.
Yeah.
We already got the HOA to let us take down the fence in the front property.
Oh, well, let's just talk about it. Can we just talk about that now?
Taking the
I'm kidding.
Skybridge? Sure.
Put it on the agenda, Mackenzie, right now.
I'll see if Allie can find you a grant for that Skybridge.
What are you saying about us, Dan?
Oh, you guys are back. Okay.
We're back.
So we've come back with the decision. We're okay with moving it within compliance, 15 feet or whatever it may be.
Great. I personally would like to see that happen. I also don't want that to happen at a heavy cost or expense to you, but if you're maintaining this as a rental, I don't see that really being anything that would change your plans. You wouldn't have to adjust the lot line at all unless you were going to sell the property. So I would like to see that happen.
Well, here's the morbid thought of the day. These buildings, that building is probably going to outlast all of us. You know what I mean? So it might be a rental for a time, and then maybe it's something else. And, you know, that's part of the consideration.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
All we are is dust in the wind.
I always like to say their children will always grow up, and then they'll need, you know, they'll get married and they'll need a house to rent. Mom and dad will be there.
Keep it in the family, right?
There you go.
As long as that intersection doesn't get too busy, you know, it's pretty dangerous, actually.
What about the children?
Well, we named the subdivision after our children, so that's got to count for something.
Okay, well, it sounds like we've kind of worked through that a bit, and thanks for exploring that with us, everybody. And so we can certainly keep talking about it, or a motion is fine as well.
In the motion, if I were to say that lot two size will be expanded, do I need to specify to meet the 10,000 square feet size, or can I just say expanded and then let them determine what that is?
I would suggest being precise.
Yeah, she's okay. On mute, but I just watched her lips and she said specify.
Okay, I will make a motion. I move that the Planning Commission recommend to the City Council the concept plan for Alton Vista PUD, a four-lot subdivision at 340 and 360 North Orchard Drive, with the following condition: lot two will be expanded to 10,000 square feet.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
From Commissioner Larson, any comments on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? So that motion is unanimous. So yeah, good luck.
Thank you.
With the family compound. It sounds awesome.
Skybridge.
It actually does sound great. I hope you guys just have a party and don't have sound ordinance issues because you're having so much fun over there. It's gonna be a great time.
You guys can all come over. It's gonna be a party.
Right on. Okay.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. I'll be in touch.
Thanks, Mackenzie. Thank you.
All right. Our next item is a consideration of a conditional use permit for retaining wall greater than 3 feet in a front yard public utility easement, 444 Rosewood Lane. And is the applicant here, Chelsea Carroll?
She is.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I'll unmute. And hi, guys.
Hello. And Mackenzie, this is your item.
This is my item. Okay. So we are doing a conditional use permit for a retaining wall. Normally this wouldn't be necessary as long as they meet code, but because they are in what we regard as a front setback, anything over 3 feet in height must go through this process. So I'll just start. They are located on the corner lot. Here in the PowerPoint, which Sherry just went to, you can see their existing condition for their side yard. They are wanting to flatten and raise their existing side yard so that they can create a safer place for their children to play. In order to do so, it requires two new retaining walls to be installed. One 8-foot block wall is or has been proposed across the back property line. And then existing, they already have a rock retaining wall, and they're going to start up at the 8-foot mark on the corner that meets with the block wall and then slope down into what's existing. Sherry, if you want to go over a couple of slides so I can, so here's a better example of what they're wanting to do. There are a couple of utility boxes, and per code, they have to be 5 feet away from any sort of utility, fire hydrant, things like that, which they have done so. That's why you see the little curve in the rock wall. And then, I mean, aside from that, both walls have been structurally engineered and reviewed by our staff engineer, and all is well. So the DRC recommends approval for the conditional use permit for the Carroll retaining wall located at 444 Rosewood Lane with no conditions as is. And I think I'll be able to answer questions a lot easier than just presenting this. So I'll open it up to you.
Thanks, Mackenzie. Ms. Carroll, anything you'd like to add?
I think she covered it pretty well. We've talked to our neighbors, and basically the way that our house is built is you go out the back door, and then there's a double tiered cliff that both children have fallen off of a couple times. And so we're kind of at our wit's end. So we're going to, we'd like to just flatten it back and then along the side have a little bit of a slope, but be able to build up the back part of our property just a bit so that they can not fall off the cliff.
Okay. All right, thank you. Questions or comments? Or a motion?
So this is Ron, Commissioner Jorgensen. I move that the Planning Commission approve the conditional use permit for the Carroll retaining wall located at 444 Rosewood Lane with no conditions.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
I think that was Commissioner Ward, right?
Yes.
Okay. Just a basic check. Any comments on the motion? Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. You had to wait that long for that quick of an item. So.
I know.
We've been working on it since December, so it's good to be able to.
I told you it would be easy today. We talked this afternoon, and I said this is going to be quick.
Awesome. Well, you saved my children's lives, so thank you for that. That's
look at how much you learned about land use in the Planning Commission, isn't it?
Oh, so much, so much.
Kelsey, I will issue your building permit and talk to you tomorrow about it, okay?
Okay, perfect. Sounds great. We'll get started. Thank you, guys.
Thanks. All right. And then we're on to a report on the City Council actions on items recommended by the Planning Commission.
So because we haven't had any action items go forward from the Planning Commission until tonight, there's nothing to report on. But we'll have something next time because now I'll have two out of three of these go on to City Council next week. So, yay. And I really am afraid of the next agenda because it has a lot of big things on it. And I got corrections back for two things, and one of them is the really big one, Eaglewood Cove. So, next meeting will be a little bit bigger than this meeting.
Okay, we'll be ready. Okay, so we'll go to minutes then. Minutes for February 23rd, 2021. Comments on the minutes. Suggested modifications, I should say. G- Good job, Andrea. I've got a minor change, but I think it will improve the, at least in fit with intent. I think I said it this way, but I'm not positive. Anyway, row 169. Chair Knowlton suggested that this should include parks, et cetera, instead of this could even. It's possible I said could even, but I'm obviously I don't have a perfect memory of it, but I would prefer to direct the consultant to include parks in adjacent communities in their calculations, since that's the way people live their lives. Any other changes to the minutes? All right, is there a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Oh, you froze.
Planning Commission approved the meeting minutes of February 23rd.
Commissioner Larson, you broke up on my end. Would you mind just repeating the motion?
Yeah, no problem. Is it working now? Can you hear? Yeah. Yes. I move that the Planning Commission approve the meeting minutes from the February 23rd, 2021 meeting.
Is there a second?
And is that as amended with Ted's correction? Oh,
yes, as amended. Thank you, Sherry.
Yeah, good catch. Okay, is there a second?
Second.
All right, Commissioner B, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, that is it. And so we'll look forward to a big one next time. And
can you indulge me for just a second, Sprong?
Yeah, go for it.
So back to the discussion about the subdivision and the geohazards, I just wanted to make sure they were aware of it. But the thing that I am curious about is we talked about a map overlay, what do we call it, a special area, sensitive area district.
Sensitive land.
Where do we find that overlay? Where does that exist?
So on our website, and you go to let me see, I'm gonna open it up and then we can all look at it together. That'll be helpful. I'll share it. And I just wanted to remind everybody that our next meeting is in 3 weeks, because March is a 5 Tuesday month and my 5th Tuesdays are sacred. Okay, because I don't have to go to a movie and a meeting on a 5th Tuesday ever.
It's not our next meeting, it's the following.
The
March one. Come on February 23rd.
Oh, it's only March 9th right now. Dang it.
Yes, come March 23rd.
I was thinking March was almost over. I guess 2 weeks ahead. Okay, our meeting really is in 2 weeks. Thanks for catching that. Yep. After that, it'll be 3 weeks. Okay, so on our website, you go to government and go to community development. And over on the left side, you'll see plans and ordinances. And you'll see me and Mackenzie's new photos that we just had taken.
Nice.
And on maps, and here are our maps. So here's the zoning map. We've got a sign overlay map, the storage overlay map. So if anybody ever wants to know where you can build storage units, you have that map, and then this is the zoning maps and the sensitive lands overlays map. So that's where you find all of our maps. If you want to go in and look at our ordinances, we have our plans. Here's all the plans, and then there's a link down here. Where is the link to the ordinance? Oh, right here. Link right here to the ordinance, and that will pull up our. We need to fix that link. I need to fix that link on the website. I'm glad we did this, because I never go and do that. Okay, and this should go directly to our code, not have to choose it. Everything that is in your purview is Title 10, the land use and subdivision ordinances. And so you can do all sorts of things here. You can look at the various chapters, like 10 and 11 are our residential zones. 11 is our commercial and industrial zones. Our CH zone is down at 25. When we're doing site plan review, we're reviewing it in 20. Some parts of our code are better written than other parts, because codes get played with for 30, 40, 50 years and things get changed that maybe don't make sense anymore. We have a lot of zones in here that don't make any sense, like that we've never used. So the garage unit overlay zone, that was a zone that was written for somebody who wanted to do man caves, I understand. So now I think that's a great idea. Send your husband away down to some storage unit where he can drink beer and watch football games, but nobody actually wanted that. So they didn't ever build it. And then we have the planned area zoning district, which was the PASD. I don't know how you, and that one, as best I can tell, was meant to be a mixed use industrial zone, but it doesn't have the accompanying second chapter that it would need. And we've never used it. Or maybe that was the MXC zone. Anyway, those are zones that we don't even use. So there are some stuff in
there. Maybe we should do a clean, you know, like a general cleanup.
I was thinking that too the
other day. I love that idea. Sherry and I talked about that this week.
So I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and so if you see something in the code that doesn't make sense, go ahead and give us a call, because I know some of it's kind of confusing.
Yeah, I was able to, well, when the geohazard stuff came up, I was able to find the language in the code. And so navigating that part was fine. I just couldn't find the map. But I guess the follow-up question I have is, why would there be a difference between what the Utah Geological Survey identifies as kind of these fault zones versus what we've identified as zones of concern? I'm not sure I'd understand why.
So, I think it has more to do with the timing of the maps and when they were adopted. Like the sensitive overlay zone, I think came about in 2001 and it hasn't been at least the map part hasn't been redone. Okay. If you read in the chapter 12, title 10, chapter 12, that's the sensitive lands regulations. So prior to that ordinance, our regulations on geologic hazards probably were like a half a page. And that's why one of the reasons why I was hired was to write that code. So we didn't go and update these maps. We just said, this is a sensitive overlay zone. And any lot that's remaining that hasn't been built on that has a slope over 15% is also restricted. So we kind of laid that into anything because we have we have a lot of development that's already happened, but you get the random lots in these older subdivisions that have never been built on. And so we really want when the people come in on those ones that they have looked at site-specific geologic hazards on that lot, because when the lot was platted in 1970 or whatever, I don't think the standard of review was there.
That's very, very helpful. I would just comment that the Utah Geologic Survey just published a study last year, and then they've been creating an online geohazards tool. And if you're not familiar with it, I would encourage you to go look at it because it can get down right to the local level. And it deals with, you know, all kinds of hazards, including radon hazards, you know, but it's steep slopes, rock falls, fault crossing, fault rupture. Anyway, it's pretty interesting. And if you look at North Salt Lake, a lot of those hazards do transect quite a bit of the community. So I think it's just, it's good to know. I shared with Mackenzie a copy of what showed up for that small subdivision. You can actually kind of drill down and come up with a lot of good information. But there is certainly language, there's very robust language in the city code that potentially could apply, but not if it's not in the, you know, not in the map high risk zones.
But it does all automatically if questionable soils are found too when they're out there and the building official goes out to do the footing and foundation inspections, that we can call it back in for additional review. Our problem with a lot of these older lots are that they have entitlements to, like, we have to have really, really good reason to say, no, you can't build on this lot that's been platted and that you've been paying taxes on, or somebody's been paying taxes on for 40 years, even if it's a really bad lot. So it can be a little scary. But we are trying to be really careful. I know that in 2015, UGS did not quite have that tool ready. And I probably should go back and look at it, and we might want to update that too, because a lot of communities are just adopting their maps as the sensitive overlay maps, as their sensitive zone maps, because they're so much better than they were even just 5 years ago.
And I appreciate, go ahead. My comment was just simply that I understand the constraints that are on it and all that kind of thing. I think if nothing else, people ought to know what they're living with, though, so that you don't get blindsided someday by some catastrophe. I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, fault rupture or whether it's, you know, accidental chemical release. Those are the kind of things where hopefully people have the right to know.
Oh, they do. Yeah, I agree. That's a good catch.
I think it's implied by the conversation that the maps, to the extent the maps refer to a hazard and our maps are not geographically aligned with the best information, that we should revisit that and modify those maps. Which is different than the implications of not being in compliance, right? That's like a policy question. Maybe we need to revisit that too, but I think at least at a minimum, just making sure our maps are as accurate as reasonably possible is a good thing to add to the list, the grand list.
I just put it in long-term action items.
What was our old statement for that? Put it on the bike rack? Is that what we used to say?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. On the bike rack.
We added all the things, we're like, just put it on the bike rack.
Commissioner Jorgensen, I am appreciative of your expertise in this area. I think it's really helpful.
What was that website you recommended, Ron?
I can send out a link if you'd like, but it's under Utah. If you just Google Utah Geologicals, let's see.
Comes right up.
Yep, that's it. I did. That's what I'm looking at.
Yeah. There's a mapping tool in there.
Yeah, I see it.
And anyway, it's interesting, and you can put your own house in there. So you know, if you've never had if it shows high for radon and you've never had it tested, you might want to get tested.
Right on.
While we're speaking of earthquakes, remember that April 15th is the great
Utah shakeout.
So you can go to this website, which is shakeout.org/Utah. And they can help you write a plan for your family, how to make a grab and go kit for emergency. And given that we had those earthquakes last year and then the windstorm and stuff, it's really brought emergency preparedness to focus for the city staff and for the city council. And so they've asked us to start, we're going to kind of push this out and get the community the resources to participate in the great shakeout and hopefully get more prepared.
Every time I hear Great Utah Shakeout, I think it's like a killer party. Hey man, you going to the shakeout? So, all right. So that this is the, when this starts happening, it means we need to adjourn. Any last thoughts? All right. Thanks to staff and everybody. And we'll be ready for the doozy next time, right?
Mm-hmm. In 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks, yep.
Which bye, is good night. Thank you,
everyone.
See you, everybody.
Thank you. Good night,
y'all.